Who said this?
Some people in Washington have difficulty in knowing who the statesmen are. It's really quite easy. The ones wearing the long-tailed coats consider themselves to be statesmen.
Who in the world said that?
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated radio stations take pleasure in presenting Who Said That? That lively session of news, fun, and personalities. And now here's your master of ceremonies, one of radio's outstanding reporters, Robert Trout.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and good evening and a very cordial welcome to our four distinguished guests, each of them loaded down, at least mentally, with the latest editions of the Sunday newspapers. Mr. Norman Thomas, newspaper reporter for the Denver Post, presidential candidate without rival. That is, as far as longevity is concerned, six hash marks for Mr. Thomas. Mr. Henry Morgan, comedian, raconteur, who once described himself as having all the foibles and faults of George Bernard Shaw and none of his greatness. A considerable distinction is that, Mr. Morgan. With the gentlemen, Morgan and Thomas, one of the best-informed actresses in America, Miss Madge Evans. In private life, Mrs. Sidney Kingsley. He's the author of the current success, the Broadway play Detective Story. And, of course, wearing the NBC colors, my friend and colleague, John Cameron Swayze. Now, all our questions, as you know, are in the form of provocative and, we hope, interesting quotes from the last week of news. Since the daily toil of all four of you more or less requires you to know the news, we take the liberty of fining you every time the team of Thomas, Morgan, Evans, and Swayze are unable to tell us who said that. The money you lose tonight may well be won by a member of our listening audience. More about that later. Now, for your money or your reputation, who said this? I could smile, but it would be artificial. Who said that, Mr. Thomas?
Our old friend Gromyko.
He did indeed. Andre Gromyko. He an old friend of yours, Mr. Thomas?
Well, I speak. It's Sunday.
Full of human kindness tonight, are you?
That's right.
I hope you're also full of money. You haven't lost any on the first question, anyway.
You're getting awfully anxious here.
Yes, right in the mood now, right at the beginning on the first question. Let's see what we can do with this one. This great country of ours has been Republican all along, if we could only get out the vote on Election Day. Here's a man who says there are more Republicans than Democrats in this country, but he says the Republicans shirk on Election Day. Who thinks that? Mr. Morgan, who thinks
well,
that?
Well, I don't know exactly. It sounds like Hooper.
You mean the Hooper Fall?
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid it wasn't, Mr. Hooper. No, at least he didn't say it for publication.
Well, what hard loser is it?
Well, what do you think, Mr. Swayze?
Well, it sounds very much like Hugh Scott.
Well, it might sound like Hugh Scott, but as a matter of fact, it's not Hugh Scott. Miss Evans, have you an idea?
Well, I'll hazard a guess. I've really no idea, but could it have been Robert Taft?
Well, it could have been. Could have. Yes, indeed. The senator from Ohio, who comes up for re-election himself in 1950. He was among those commenting on last week's elections in Michigan, Maryland, and Wisconsin when he said that.
Wasn't he the man who also said people should eat less?
I think so, one time, Mr. Morgan.
All right, let him keep talking, that's all.
Mr. Thomas, do you think the Republicans are especially remiss about going to the polls, or do you think all parties equally?
It isn't the people that don't go, it's the people that do go that worry me.
Oh, well put, Mr. Thomas. How about this one? Sometimes people have difficulty in knowing who the statesmen are in Washington. Now, it's really quite easy. Just look around the room. The ones wearing tails consider themselves to be statesmen. The tails are clothes, I might add, if that point needs clearing up. White tie. Said by a man who's been a guest of ours on Who Said That. Mr. Morgan, who's been a guest of ours on Who Said That?
Gee whiz, I've been awful busy, Bob. I don't...
Well, who said, look around the room, the gentleman wearing tailcoats of the statesmen? Miss Evans, you seem to have an idea.
No, I haven't. I'm sorry. I don't think Mr. Thomas said it, did he?
No.
I think statesmen are all dead. That is to say, they're dead politicians, mostly.
I see, Mr. Thomas. I thought you were going to say they were dead and had been buried in tailcoats. Mr. Swayze, tell us.
That's our very good friend, Jim Farley.
That's who it was. James A. Farley.
Gee whiz, don't applaud him. That's his business.
He's very good
newscaster,
at it, Mr. Morgan.
He has to know this stuff.
He's very good at it. He seems to know all the answers, Mr. Morgan.
Listen, who said a statesman is a dead politician, which Mr. Thomas just said? Somebody did say that once.
Who oh, yes, it? That's right. I don't remember who, but somebody said it before me. You know, some people even made your gags probably before you, Henry.
You know that that's very likely?
That is.
Mr. Swayze, you have nothing to add to that little discussion, Eric.
Well, I think Tom Dewey said something very much like that.
Oh, really?
Not too long ago.
I won't argue about it. I don't know. Well, it's good to know, anyway.
Don't you think Mr. Trout should put some money up? He didn't know who said it.
That's a splendid idea.
Oh, that would be against the basic principle of the whole thing, Miss Evans. What do you think of this quotation? Maybe what I need is a good psychiatrist. That's part of the quotation. Maybe what I need is a good psychiatrist. Yes, perhaps two or three psychiatrists might be able to figure out my case. Who has been talking like that recently? Perhaps two or three psychiatrists might be able to figure out my case. That's a very strange look you're giving us, Mr. Morgan. Does that mean you know the answer?
Well, sounds like one of those catch things, you know, where it's supposed to be me who said it. I didn't say that.
No, I'm not accusing you of saying it this time. No,
I've been working very hard all week. I haven't read anything. I don't know.
Mr. Thomas, who might need two or three psychiatrists to help straighten him out
that's
these
a different
days?
Question.
Oh, that's a different question. Their name is Legion.
Well, not Legion this time. Who actually said it then, no? You know who said, yes, perhaps two or three psychiatrists might be able to figure out my case? You know, Mr. Swayze?
I think so. I think that's the Mr. Crow, who is alleged to have taken nearly $1 million from the bank.
That's right.
That's when they brought him back from Florida, or at the time of his arrest in Florida.
You got to read to get on this program?
How could you read the 100 best books that you read every day if you had to look through
all
this?
Here it is. Here's this halfwit that steals all the money, and we've got to read every word he says. Otherwise, we don't... Oh, well.
Oh, he said some very interesting things, Mr. Morgan, he did. You remember Sam Goldwyn's quotation on that subject? He said, anyone who goes to a psychiatrist ought to have his head examined. You
know that? I wrote that for him.
I didn't know you were writing for Sam Goldwyn now. Try this one. I often think that sequels or second volumes are bad. That's why I've refused to tell all that I left out of The Gay Illiterate. I will not write a second book. Now, her job is done, she says. Said by someone you've lampooned, Mr. Morgan, by the way.
Is that Luella Parsons?
That is Luella Parsons. I think Madge Evans was just going to say Luella Parsons before you did, Mr. Morgan. It was indeed Luella Parsons.
Yeah, there. We know lots of the illiterates. And oh, what am I saying? That's probably nasty, isn't it? I didn't mean her.
In a way, yes. She was commenting on the news that Noah Coward's writing a second volume of his autobiography, you know, a book to follow his success of a few years ago, Present Indicative.
And she says she wasn't going to write another book?
Right. Not a
sequel.
She
never wrote the first one. What's the... Big stuff there. She can't write. She's a nice lady and all that, but can't write.
Mr. Morgan, do you think Miss Parsons would be a good guest for this program some night when you're here?
Well, she doesn't know anything. What's the point in that? I don't know anything, and I admit it. The only difference between us is she doesn't know anything and she doesn't admit it.
I've certainly learned
nice
a lot.
Nice lady and all that.
I've certainly learning a lot from you, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, you do very well by not knowing anything, seems to me.
We'll get to your case in just a moment.
I think we're all getting an education.
Who doesn't know what about what?
We're certainly all learning a lot. Try this one, Mr. Morgan, and guess.
Most she can't even mention me in her column, you know, without paying a fine.
I didn't know that.
That's true. Any Hearst writer is not allowed to mention me. That's a fact.
Really? You're a mine of information, Mr. Morgan.
Am I not?
Yeah.
Mostly about me, I must confess, but I'm a mine of information.
Well, it's a subject you know very well.
I'll tell you what happened now that you ask me. I don't want to hold up the game, but this has always been a thing that's bothered me. It's about 1942. About 42, we were going in the war, you know. And I had a 15-minute show then, and I was happy, too, and didn't know it. And I hadn't gone into the Army yet. And one night on the air, I read the Chicago Tribune, seeing they had big black headlines about the war is all wrong, and the people in it are wrong, and everybody's wrong. So I went on the air, and I said, I have a newspaper here. It's called the Chicago Bayaboxer. This is true. And I said, the publisher is William Randolph Himmelstoss. And, you know, they were very... The Tribune's a peculiar paper, you know. And since that point, Hearst has never mentioned me.
What about Robert McCormick?
Well, yes, where did they...
McCormick doesn't even mention Hearst.
Yeah.
Well, I killed my career for the 19th time.
All right.
Next question.
Here it is. You've certainly been telling us things we didn't know about, Mr. Morgan. Quote, most of all, I've wanted to write a play, but I've never been able to make Broadway. The novel, My Old Standby, is like a good steady provider, the kind of fellow you can marry. While the theater, that's the handsome guy who's a lot of fun, but you'd be a fool to marry him, the bum. Miss Evans, who said that?
Betty Smith, who wrote A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, and she couldn't be more wrong. Believe me.
You don't agree with her?
Oh, I don't agree with her, particularly at this present moment. I don't agree with her. Detective story's doing too well.
It is, yes, it is. She says that the theater's a good boyfriend, but a bad husband, a bad provider.
Oh, she's very wrong. I don't think she ever married the theater. She should try it and find out. It's good, believe me, it's good.
Well, if the Empire is single, I'll put in a bid.
And you'll have life with mother. Is that bad?
I have an answer which can't be used in radio. I don't...
Well, how about this? Quote, Papa is very good tonight. Very good, my dear. Unquote. Short and simple. Miss Evans, you know that one, too? Papa's very good tonight.
Yes, that was Mrs. Winston Churchill, I believe.
Yes, it was. It was. Yes, as Mr. Churchill was speaking in Boston, his eyes met hers, he nodded solemnly, and it was then that Mrs. Churchill said to her daughter-in-law, Mrs. Randolph Churchill, Papa is very good tonight.
I think, according to the account I read, Mr. Trout, Mr. Churchill winked at her.
Winked at her?
Yes, that's what it said.
I like that better than nodded solemnly, don't you?
So do I.
Glad you put that in, Miss Evans. How about this? Harvard University, Columbia, and the University of Chicago are the three leading academic strongholds of communist fronters. It's a national scandal. Who do you think said that? You don't need his exact name if you could give us his title or former title or tell us something about him. Who said that it's a national scandal that Harvard, Columbia, and the University of Chicago are the three leading academic strongholds of communist fronters? Mr. Morgan, that's right down your alley.
Well, I got confused. I thought it was my house, you know, and I don't know who said that. It could be any one of my best friends.
Mr. Swayze, you know who said that?
No, I'm a KU man myself from Lawrence. I am not acquainted with these schools you mentioned.
Boy, if you beat Swayze, you must have made the question up.
No, almost, but not quite made it up. Mr. Thomas, who do you think it was? You couldn't go very far wrong. Well, you won't be surprised to know that the gentleman in question was a former research director for the House Un-American Activities Committee under Representative Martin Dies. His name is Joseph Matthews. If you'd given me any of it about the Un-American Activities Committee, it would have been all right, but I'm glad to say you can contribute $5 apiece if you don't mind. He says, Harvard, Columbia, and Chicago harbor the largest number of Reds. I know what a Columbia man named Eisenhower has to say about that. He says there are not many Reds at Columbia. What does a Princeton man named Norman Thomas have to say?
I would take a great deal of evidence to make me believe anything said by the gentleman that you said made that remark. I know him.
You do know him.
I can hardly imagine a worse authority. I'm speaking seriously.
You take exception
well,
to it, then.
You mean worse authority on that subject, but he's certainly an authority on others. Isn't he? Yes, say yes.
Well,
Mr. Tarver says well. Right. And I see we've just about reached our halfway mark, so let's ask our scorekeeper, Ken Banghart, to tell us how much money you guests have lost so far tonight.
Well, Bob, so far the team of Thomas, Empire Theater Morgan, Evans, and Swayze have let one line drive get past them, and they're collectively only $20 poorer. So let's see what we can do to boost that total, Bob.
Right. I hope we can boost it with this. It takes only one of two reasons for me to like a man, but it takes 100 for me to dislike him. It's the most satisfying, yet the most expensive luxury to tell a man exactly what you think of him. Who said that? Maybe I should tell you that it was not said during the last week or so, but it has been printed in a number of papers this week in connection with a certain event. It takes only one of two reasons for me to like a man, but it takes 100 for me to dislike him, Mr. Morgan.
This is a real wild one. Is this Truman?
No, not President Truman. Mr. Swayze.
That was said by the late Jimmy Walker, and it it came out this week in some of the reviews of Gene Fowler's book, Bo James, which is, of course, the story of Jimmy Walker.
That's right. Life and Times of Jimmy Walker, as a matter of fact, by Gene Fowler. Quite right. Couldn't get you to pay any money on that one. A new book came out last week, I believe. By the way, you know that Mr. Walker had that nickname given to him by the public, Jimmy. His friends didn't call him quite that. You know what his friends
called him? Jim.
Left the M-Y off. I can't even stick you on one that's not for money, can I, Mr. Swayze?
Well, I don't worry about the ones that aren't for money so much.
I wish I could. What do you think of this? What we're about to do here is a
I know a fellow called Walker George. How about that?
Well, what'd he say, Mr. Morgan? What'd he say?
They just call him George, that's all.
Oh, I see, I
don't want to start any argument here, but there was a fellow called Walker George.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Very good, very good. Very interesting indeed.
I was
sure.
A fellow.
Oh, really? What do you think of this? What we're about to do here is a neighborly act. We're like a group of householders living in the same locality who decide to enter into a formal association for their mutual protection. Said by an old householder. Miss Evans, who was that householder?
President Truman.
That's President Truman.
That was in reference to the North Atlantic Pact.
That's right. He said that when he signed the North Atlantic Pact. And you see, Mr. Morgan, you were just one question ahead with Truman. If you just saved Truman for one question later, you'd have been absolutely right.
I call him Jim.
Oh, I see. That's funny. I was going to say you called him Walker George. Who said this? Marriage is popular because it combines the maximum of temptation with the maximum of opportunity. Who said that?
Henry Morgan.
No, it's, making Henry Morgan laugh, but I don't think Henry Morgan said it.
I don't believe anybody said it.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Mr. Thomas, who do you think said that?
I haven't any idea. Did Shaw say that?
Of course Shaw said that.
You know I knew that? As the Lord is my witness, I knew that.
That's right. That's our Shavianism of the week from the man who never shaves. Who said that's chief writer, you might say? George Bernard Shaw. Yes, indeed. How about this one? Do you think I'd leave Ernest Bevin alone with the President of the United States? Who asked that question? Do you think I'd leave Ernest Bevin alone with the President of the United States? It was said with a smile. Poor Ernest Bevin. 3 weeks ago, Mr. Churchill was riding him. Then the tailors of London scolded him, said his clothes are impossible. And this week, a statesman says, I wouldn't leave him alone with the President. Jokingly. Who do you think it might have been? Who has a sense of humor among our Washington set, Mr. Morgan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Mrs. Bevin, but apparently it's not.
No. Somebody in Washington this past week, Mrs. Bevin didn't come with him, I don't think.
Oh, scandal?
No, you know, I don't even know if there is a Mrs. Bevin now that you mention that.
Is there?
Yes, I think there is. I don't know. Anyway, you missed one, I'm happy to say. It was the French Foreign Minister, Robert Schuman. Joking, of course.
Well, naturally it was.
Oh, yes. Now, the President invited Mr. Bevin to Blair House, and the reporters didn't know that Mr. Schuman had been invited, too. So Mr. Schuman said, oh, yes, I've been invited. You think I'd leave Mr. Bevin alone with the President? Mr. Thomas, do you know Mr. Schuman?
No, I don't know Mr. Schuman. I know Mr. Bevin. And I think Mr. Schuman is well advised.
Think he's a good talker, do you?
Well, he can be. He talked 10 minutes straight telling me how wrong I was once about Spain, and he hardly paused to take breath. That was when he was backing the policy which he later abandoned, namely the policy of so-called non-intervention. And I heard him talk plenty.
You didn't agree with him, though, when he'd finished.
No, I didn't agree with him.
I
thought he was a man of much force.
Uh-huh. Who do you think said this? Churchill, the main instigator of the new war, already has succeeded in losing the confidence of his nation and all the democracies of the world. The same fate awaits other warmongers. Who said that about Winston Churchill?
I got a guess. Henry Wallace?
No.
Why, you're all so smart. You sit there nobody's asking you.
Mr. Morgan is addressing...
And they can see the answer, you know,
I think it's Senator Langer.
No, it's not Republican Senator Langer from North Dakota.
Wasn't that said by a Russian source?
Mr. Swayze, what would you call a Russian source?
Pravda.
Pravda?
Yeah.
Well, they were quoting somebody when they said it. Whom are they quoting? Who's being quoted by?
I don't know. One of their numerous writers, I suppose.
What do you think, Miss Evans?
Molotov, Gromyko,
Miss Evans, who do you think they might have been quoting?
Ilya Ehlenberg. He's in the doghouse, though, now, isn't he?
I don't know whether he's in the doghouse or not.
Fushinsky?
Who are they quoting, Miss Evans?
I'm just guessing again, but I thought that it was said in the Senate by Jenna.
Wasn't it Stalin himself?
Of course, it was Stalin.
Keep at it.
Did you say that, Mr. Morgan?
What's going on here, boy?
Did you say that first, Mr. Morgan?
There's some communist spies in here. Wiretapping, something's going on.
I didn't know. I thought I heard you
whisper. There's a leak
that.
On this program, Robert.
Mr. Swayze is not wearing special earphones. Well, if you said it first, we'll give you all the credit. It's only theoretical credit anyway, Mr. Morgan, just so you don't have to pay a fine.
I can use it. I don't have a sponsor anyway. I could use theoretical credit. It's just as good as a theoretical sponsor, you know.
I see what you mean. Well, no money has to go into the kitty on that one anyway. Try this one. I computed last night that if Adam and Eve started the game about 4,000 B.C. and had been reasonably reproductive, if we had a 10% population increase per generation, unless my slide rule has slipped, our population at this time would completely cover the earth, the deserts and the oceans, 15 layers deep. Who said that?
It's a horrible thought.
It is. Said by a scientist. Said by a man who's an optimist, very cheerful about the future. He said,
I think it was said by Bush, by Vannier Bush.
That's right, Mr. Thomas. That's right, by Mr. Vannevar Bush.
How'd he get to thinking about that?
If he's an optimist, yeah.
That's a good question, Mr. Morgan.
You said he was an optimistic fellow.
Yes. Actually, he was speaking at MIT, you know, and he was refuting the thought that the population is growing so fast that none of us will have anything to eat in a few years. Mm. He says, no, that theory is wrong. The Earth's population is not growing faster than the food supply.
Mm. Well, we don't have to worry about that.
No, let's worry about something else.
He doesn't eat in New York restaurants, so he wouldn't know.
Well, Mr. Morgan, we've been going along very well here, don't you think, tonight, so far?
I've never been so happy in my whole life.
You haven't? Well, we're sitting here
talking. You kind of half conceal it, though.
Very good, Mr. Thomas. While we've been sitting here talking, you know, I've been thinking a little bit about last election night when we at NBC stated our microphone some 16 hours describing the Truman victory over Dewey, and we were not above feeling just a little bit proud of our larynxes at that point. Well, last night, or should I say yesterday, I was with you watching a fellow named Burl raise $1,200,000 by talking continuously for more than 16 hours. The Damon Runyon Cancer Fund and America's fight against that dread disease is $1 million closer to victory thanks to a great entertainer's stamina and to the American people's great heart. To paraphrase Mr. Kipling, you're a better money getter than I am, Milton Burl, and what a larynx. What a larynx, a beautiful one. Don't you all agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
I'll give my hand on that.
That was really television history. Who said this? Well, it looks as if I'm finally forced to buy a farm on which we hope to grow children. Everyone knows today that a columnist must have a farm or kids if he wants to stay in business and have something to write about. Who said that? The man went on to say, it's not true that columnist Bob Considine beats his kids until they provide him with a subject for his daily sermon. Who talks like that? What writer writes that way? Oh, someone you've all read, Miss Evans. I bet you read his column last week.
Earl Wilson.
No, Mr. Morgan, not Earl Wilson this time. What were you going to say, Miss Evans?
Well, I'm just guessing again, but it sounds like Bob Considine himself.
No, it's a friend of Mr.
Jimmy
Considine.
Cannon.
No, not James Cannon, Mr. Morgan.
Walter Winchell.
Not Walter Winchell.
Leonard Lyon.
Robert Ruark.
Robert Ruark, Mr. Slater. Our old friend Bob Ruark. Yes, he writes a good piece every day without kids or a farm. Robert Ruark. Does have a dog, though. He says the dog's as necessary to a daily columnist as newsprint.
He says his doesn't provide very good copy, though. That's his complaint.
No, he suspects the dog of talking to Bob Considine, I think.
Did you just make that up?
I just quoted Mr. Ruark. Well, I have a job writing for you, Mr. Morgan, perhaps.
Well, I could use somebody.
Well, I don't know. If you're going to write for Sam Goldwyn, what'll I do?
Who do you... you can write yours in English.
Very good. All right. Well, you know, each week one of our questions is supplied by a member of our radio audience, who in turn receives a $50 savings bond for sending it in. This question we call our all-time quote, and this week it's on the subject of love. The judges have decided Mrs. Hazel Adams of Chicago, Illinois, wins the $50 savings bond, and if you guests are unable to identify her quote on love, then Mrs. Adams is also going to win all the money in the fishbowl. How much is it tonight, Ken?
Well, two quotes, Mr. Noah, Bob, so that Mrs. Adams has a chance to win $40 if our four guests are unable to identify this all-time quote. Who said this about love?
To love very much is to love inadequately. We love, that is all. Love cannot be modified without being nullified. Love's a short word, but it contains everything. It means the body, the soul, the life, the entire being. Love is not a word, it's a wordless state indicated by four letters. End of the all-time quotation. Who do you think said that? Who do you think said that? I can give you a couple of hints. I don't know how much you're going to help, but I'm allowed to tell you only that this man's literature is in the public domain. And I might add, Mr. Morgan, which will confuse you thoroughly, that you have been called by this man's first name.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
No. No. No,
set
sir.
Set that out at children's hour.
No, now, maybe you better forget that second hint. That, you just stick to the first one. His literature...
I've been called what by this man's first name?
You've just been addressed by it, I think. I'm sure you have. Wait until you'll see. You'll see that you've been addressed by it. Miss Evans, what sort of writer do you think that sounds like?
Pretty corny.
Yes, I was thinking.
Well, in his time...
I don't know that writer.
No good writer's first name was Morgan.
No.
Maybe it was Hank.
Well, it's a gentleman who's known or was known by his own countrymen as Guy de Maupassant. But, you know, we must anglicize
it. How wrong can we be, Mr. Thomas?
Aren't you ashamed that you called him corny? But how could we refer to G. Morgan? So let's call him Guy de Maupassant. Haven't you ever been called a good guy, Henry?
Not lately.
Anyway, it was Guy de Maupassant, the great creator of the short story In France. Well, your guests were unable to identify that all-time quote on love, so you've made it possible for Mrs. Adams to collect not only the $50 bond, but also the $40 in our sinking fund.
That isn't what made him a great writer, not that quote.
He wrote it, though, Mr. Thomas, he wrote it. Perhaps you at home would like to try to win some of the money lost by next week's guests, plus a $50 savings bond. And here are the rules of next week's all-time quote contest.
For next Sunday night's program, we want your favorite quotation on that favorite of all subjects, eating, that which we spend 1/6 of our waking hours doing. You can quote anyone you wish, from Falstaff to Duncan Hines and from Henry VIII to Fanny Farmer, anyone at all. Send your favorite quote on eating to Who Said That? Care of the National Broadcasting Company, New York 20, New York. Keep it under 50 words and include a brief description of where and when the words were spoken. The decision of the judges is final, and in the event of duplicate quotes, the one most accurate and best documented will be selected. All entries become the property of NBC, and entries for this week must be received by midnight Friday, April the 15th. And now back to Robert Trout and next week's guests.
Sorry we're late tonight. Just time enough to say thank you to Madge Evans, Norman Thomas, and Henry Morgan. Many thanks, and see you next...
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.